Welcome to Manager Tools. How to evaluate answers to the weakness question. Part one. Here we go. This cast answers these questions. Why should I ask the weakness question in an interview? What are good answers to the weakness question in an interview? What are bad answers to the weakness question in an interview? If you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. Mark, before we begin, I don't know if you realize this, but our first podcast was June 26, 2005?
Yep. This is our 12th anniversary show.
12 years of doing this.
Yeah, and I can't believe you start with, I don't know if you know this or not, because I was the one that mentioned it before we started recording. Look,
it's just my lame way of trying to introduce the topic into the podcast.
Now
people are going to be like, oh, he's such an idiot. No, they've been listening for 12 years. They already know that. So,
yeah, we're both idiots at times. Yeah, so folks, thanks. Those of you who have been here since the very beginning, a special thanks to the rest of the audience, hundreds of thousands, millions of people over the years. Thank you for being faithful and for making our community so great. And we're honored and privileged to still be doing this. And we have many years to go. I'll be shocked. I'll probably be dead if I'm not doing this still in 12 years.
You know, it's interesting, folks, if you don't know, I don't know why you would know that. Paul, our tech guy, was out on vacation for 2 weeks, and so I was filling in for him. It was the most miserable 2 weeks of my life, I must say. But I was doing, I had to do some work where I had to look at the database, and there were records of purchases and stuff, and one of them was licenses. And you know who our first licensee was?
I don't.
Steve Holden.
He
appears at the top of this list every single time. And every time I look at it, I just say a prayer of thanks for Steve Holden. So Steve, if you're listening, and I'm sure you are, thank you for being number one in our hearts and in our minds. Ouch. Okay, I took it too far there. Okay. All right. Thanks, everybody. This has been a great 12 years, and I'm living the dream life. I must tell you, I love work every single day. I like people I work with, love the people I work with, and our customers. And I can't thank you enough for making my dream come true. So thank you all. All right. So now they don't want to hear about that. What they want to know is our topic today. And I'm glad we're going to talk about this, because this question drives me crazy, both from the perspective of interviewers asking what's your biggest weakness and not knowing how to evaluate answers and doing it all wrong, as well as the stupid advice there out there on the internet in terms of how to answer it if you're the candidate, which is really not the topic of our conversation today, but I'm sure we've addressed it elsewhere.
Yeah, in fact, the genesis for me writing this when I did is there's a blog post or a website out there from a well-regarded HR person saying you should never ask the weakness question. It's wrong. It's bad. And she has all kinds of very specious claims that are ludicrous, frankly. And even if the weakness question was bad, one of the things we've learned is that managers are incredibly prone to ask it. And there's an entire, we could have many, many podcasts and will about what questions to ask and why to ask them and so on. And what a question does for you, and this may be the first in many of those, but the weakness question is an absolutely reasonable question. It tells you an awful lot about skill alignment, cultural alignment, character, integrity of a candidate, and it's a hard question. And because we at Manager Tools believe that you should set the bar high, and the purpose of an interview is to say no, to find reasons to say no, hard questions are good. Now, they should be fair questions, and the weakness question is a fair question because it only calls on information that the candidate has, which is his or her performance, his or her abilities, his or her characteristics, his or her traits. Not difficult, but it does require self-awareness and humility, which often seem to be in short supply.
I love this question most of the time. Sometimes it just makes the interview painful for me, but I love it in the sense that generally what happens is either somebody just completely blows it, and then that's fine, and I've gotten the information I need right to know to make a decision, right? Since the purpose of an interview is to find reasons to say no. On the other hand, occasionally somebody just blows me away with their answer. And it's just like, oh, it's just like the heavens open up. And assuming that the rest of the interview goes well, it's just the icing on the cake that just makes me feel very confident of my desire to make an offer. So,
all right, well, let's get to it. Our outline is really simple. First, the two reasons to ask the question. Reason number one, self-awareness and candor. And reason number two, role and cultural alignment. And those two reasons mimic the whole concept of skills and abilities for self-awareness and candor, and traits and characteristics for role and cultural alignment. Then we've got four bad answers. Bad answer number one is an overused strength. Bad answer number two is they mention a weakness that is a needed strength for the role because they haven't thought through their own weaknesses. Bad answer number three, pretty obvious, dodging, literally not answering the question. There are a number of ways people do that. Bad answer number four goes with the needed strength thing, which is cultural misfit. Their weakness is something that makes them not right for the environment you want in the organization, even if in fact they have the skills and abilities that are necessary. And then I added this a couple of days ago to the podcast, the last point, which is how to ask the weakness question. And you'll see on the first point about reason number one that we're going to walk through something that helps people understand the scale that you use for determining what your weakness is, and including that in the question can really help reduce the chances. We want a question to be tough, but we also want it to be fair. We don't want people to make bad choices simply because they don't know. Otherwise, you start getting into trick questions. So I'll tell you how I ask the weakness question when I ask it in an interview.
Before we get into the bad answers, let's talk about why would we ask the question in the first place?
Okay, so basics first. The primary reason you're going to ask any question in an interview is that you believe it'll help you identify what we call, or what is widely known as, a false positive candidate, right? There are four possible outcomes of an interview. You have a true positive, meaning you decide to make an offer, you believe this person is right, to someone who in fact is right. That is not the same thing as a person who accepts your offer. That's a completely different thing. We're not even talking about acceptance yet. Okay, so there's a true positive. There is a true negative, meaning you say no to somebody who would have turned out poorly.
And those are both good outcomes, right? Those two are,
yeah, absolutely. Good, that's what people shoot in a way. That's what people shoot for in interviewing. Then there is a false negative, meaning you say no to a candidate who would have been great, which a lot of managers worry about because of the urge to hire. One of the fundamental problems with interviewing is the urge to hire. When you come in, when you finally get approval, or when someone says, yes, you can hire, yes, we have the budget for it, and so on, managers are hungry to hire. They're trying to solve a problem of too much work or some work that's really critical not being done. And so therefore, they tend to think about, let's find somebody to like.
Right. Well, they want to avoid that, what they think of as a terribly bad outcome, right? Which is, there was somebody I could have hired that would have been good, but I missed them. That's what they're focusing on. And the problem is, focusing on that ends you up in the worst of things, which we call hell on earth.
Hell on earth, exactly, which is a false positive, saying yes to somebody who later turns out to be a bad hire. And I don't think I've ever seen a hand go up when I ask somebody who's had the experience before. And I asked the question in two parts. Anybody here ever hired somebody they later regretted within a year? And, you know, out of 25 people, 5, maybe 10 hands go up. I say, any one of you ever think that you want to do that again? And all the hands go down. I said, anybody want to know how to avoid that happening forever and ever and ever, even if it means every once in a while saying no to somebody who would be good? And all 5 hands go back up. Yeah. So again, any question is, you want to identify false positives. If you do that really well, you'll end up with some true positives. I promise you. You know, it's funny. The U.S. Open in golf just happened at Erin Hills. And one of the things that the U.S. Open is famous for is being the toughest setup of a golf course every year for the pros in the United States. And typically, the history is they try to make it so that a very high score for pro golfers wins. You know, par, for instance, wins, when in fact there are tournaments when the winning score is 24 under par or 18 under par. I think the Masters has been won a couple of times, Jordan Spieth and Tiger Woods, by 18 under par. And there were some people who were complaining about Erin Hills because it wasn't that hard. I can't remember what Brooks Koepka won by, but anyway, a number of years ago, somebody won by 7 under at the U.S. Open. And the next year, there's something called the Massacre at Medina where I think the winner scored 7 over. They just tried to make it super, super hard. And someone asked, you know, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to embarrass the greatest golfers in the world? He says, no, we're not trying to embarrass the greatest golfer in the world. We're trying to identify them. So it's good to have tough interview questions. It's good to have hard questions. Now, tough and hard are often translated into, I'm going to be gruff, I'm going to be distant, I'm going to be standoffish. We don't recommend that. We recommend casual, relaxed, friendly, comfortable, smiling, and tough questions. So the weakness question is, in fact, a tough question because it has a number of pitfalls, as you'll see. So we ask the weakness question because we believe it'll highlight some aspect of a candidate that's going to help you find a reason to say no to them. And you know, some people say, oh, we're looking for holes. Yeah, sort of. Not really. You're looking for weaknesses. You're finding faults. And people say to me, well, you know, Mark, if you're going to go out and find faults, you can always find them. I said, yeah, but you're oversimplifying it. I don't want to find faults particularly. I'm trying to identify areas that are not a match for us in skills and abilities and traits and characteristics in terms of their ability to do the job and their ability to fit within the organization. Of course, everyone has faults. We don't have a podcast long enough for me to list all my faults. And yet I could probably get hired for some things. And so it's not a matter of picking at people. It's a matter of knowing the job well enough, understanding it. And when you find a weakness, when you find something that's not as good as you might like it to be, knowing whether or not that is germane, that is relevant to the job that you're looking for. And why wouldn't you hire? I mean, it'd be okay to hire somebody with a known weakness if the weakness is not something that is aligned critically against things. And why wouldn't you want to know the weakness of somebody? I'm not talking about a fatal flaw, but why wouldn't you want to know the weaknesses of somebody before you hire them?
Yeah, it's interesting because I make an assumption when we're talking or when I'm talking with a client or anybody, when I say weakness, I almost always mean weakness relative to the requirements of the position, not weakness in the absolute. Like, for example, if I'm hiring a marketing person, the fact that they don't know how to write Perl scripts to automate their job, that's not a weakness I care about. It's all relative to the position that you're hiring for.
It's not that we're looking for somebody who doesn't have weaknesses. We all have them. We are looking to find anyone whose weaknesses match up unfavorably against what we need and what we want. So here at Manager Tools, we always ask the weakness question. We do it because behavioral interview questions, when we use behavioral interviewing, those questions tend to focus on strengths. So when we ask somebody, tell me about a time when you had to overcome limited resources to achieve an important objective, we don't expect to hear all about the mistakes the candidate made. We don't. I mean, somebody might mention one, and it's not particularly relevant. It might be interesting. It might be nice verisimilitude, but regardless. On the other hand, remember this. Successful managers spend far more time leveraging the strengths of their team than they do shoring up their weaknesses. Look, when we ask a behavioral question, it's unlikely we're going to hear about a failure, but the bias in behavioral interviewing is towards uncovering strengths, and we're looking for strengths because strengths are what makes a difference in the workplace. Peter Drucker teaches us that all of our success comes from our strengths. He has an entire chapter on it in Effective Executive about knowing your strengths. Shoot, speaking of books, one of the most popular management books that I agree with its popularity is First Break All the Rules. And it's not the greatest title in the world. I suppose it appeals to rule breakers, but the title refers to the misguided rule that good managers are thought to be good at turning the weaknesses of their directs into strengths. But that's false. That's a complete and utter myth. What it basically says is what Drucker says, which is, you know, find people's strengths and put them in positions where they can lever those strengths.
Before I go on, you mentioned behavioral interviewing a number of times. And I'm not, if folks haven't listened to some of our previous casts on the topic, they may not know what that means. And I think it's important that they do. There is a different way of interviewing that's not nearly as useful.
Yeah, so I'm a victim of my own academic creep there. I take it for granted that that's the, you know, I'm steeped in my own juices, I guess. Behavioral interviewing is the most common, almost universal, among the greatest companies in the world, the most common ways to interview candidates. It is based on a principle that the only way to predict future success compared to all the others, the best way, not the only way, the best way to predict future success is to ask for past successes. The only way to predict future uses of behaviors, things people do, this is what Manager Tools has been talking about for 12 years, is to ask about past uses of behaviors that you have identified as important for your role. It requires you to analyze the role, and then it requires you to create questions which ask a candidate things like, one of the things that's important here is customer service. Tell me about a time where you had to serve a customer despite the fact that the customer's needs had already failed to have been met, and what did you do to provide service recovery to a customer successfully?
Right, and folks, and notice the difference between that and asking the question, what would you do under this circumstance?
Yeah, that's ludicrous, yeah. And you're right, people do that all the time, and it's dumb. So that's behavioral interviewing. And by the way, we're recording this in 2017, and there's plenty of stuff on the web now about artificial intelligence coming into hiring. I don't think there's any question it will. I think it probably will hit other parts besides interviewing first, resume screening and so on. And I would look forward to IBM's Watson trying to solve the problem of complete natural language interview questions and so on. But for now, those of you who are 30, you don't have any worry that in the next 20 years that your need to be able to interview will be diminished at all. And I can't imagine any company for any senior management or even mid-level management position turning it over to a bot.
Okay, so you mentioned, so we all have weaknesses, right? That's, you know, you said we don't have a podcast long enough to cover yours, and we don't have 20 podcasts to cover mine. So we all have them. But I guess the key here is, and what, one of the reasons we asked the question is, it's a strength of one's character to know what your weaknesses are, right? We all have them, but it's nice when you know what they are.
Yeah. And look, I want to go back to, I mentioned Drucker talking about we have to know our weaknesses so that we can reduce their impact on our work efforts. What that may mean is avoiding work in our role that requires strength in our area of weakness. Or, for instance, there are people who are geniuses but can't work with people. So what can we do to structure a role that causes them to not work with people if, in fact, they're that important to us? Or it may be structuring a job or a role in a particular way, or hiring people around us who mitigate our own shortcomings. That happens all the time, especially in senior positions when the person's strength is particularly aligned to, say, the next 5 or 10 years of strategy or tactics of a particular company. But, okay, your point is perfect, right? Okay. When we ask the weakness question, one of the things we're doing is assessing the candidate's professional maturity. Does he know that he has weaknesses? And there are people who, in the dark night of their soul at 3 a.m., of course, would admit it. But in day-to-day life, they don't admit it. And it's basically puffery because looking at their weaknesses is so hard and so it just brings up all kinds of feelings of insecurity and so on that they simply refuse to acknowledge them, because to say them out loud is to admit that they're who they think they are, a poor lonely soul, again at 3 a.m. So does he know that he has weaknesses? Does he know also what they are? Is he confident enough to discuss them? And has he proven he can mitigate them? Now look, does he know he has weaknesses? That's a maturity thing. Does he know what they are? That's a self-analysis thing. That's also a self-feedback thing. Is he confident enough to discuss them? That's, again, a maturity thing. And has he proven he can mitigate them? That's behavioral. That's the analysis together with the maturity. Okay, but now I got to take an aside, Mike, because we come to a really fundamental problem with the weakness question. And it is, what really is a weakness? There are plenty of ways to think of how you mean the word. And that generally means for every person, there's a different analysis, different way to think about it. But there's a misunderstanding here with this question that hurts an awful lot of candidates. There are plenty of true positive candidates, the ones, obviously the ones we should hire, who would give a bad answer to this question because they're using the wrong definition. So we better ourselves be clear about what we're asking. And in fact, the last item in this cast is me sketching out how to ask the weakness question so that you don't have this common problem. Okay, so let's think about weaknesses for a second. There are two common ways to think about weaknesses. One is a weakness which is relative to the candidate population. In other words, you're asking me, if Mike's interviewing me, he's asking me, Mark, what are the things that you do that you're pretty sure are below average, as best you could understand it, to the candidates that I'm interviewing or the population in general?
To the other five management experts in the world, right?
Yeah. And the second one is measuring your weaknesses relative to one's self. No comparison with a candidate population or sample population or world population, okay? So let's start with that candidate population standard initially. First, we have to assume we could accurately characterize the range of skill levels possible among all candidates for a job. Some of them would be terrible, some below average, some above average, some perfect, right? And if you want to make the comparison visual, think of a vertical scale from 0 to 10. Horizontal lines at 0, which is the bottom and terrible, a definite no. 5, which is average in quotes, of course. And then 10, perfect, desperate to hire this person. When a candidate uses that scale, the scale of the relative to the candidate population, they assume that a weakness is one of their skills that falls below the average skill level of the population. In other words, they believe that a weakness of theirs is also going to be a weakness for their candidacy. They believe that if they have a skill that is weaker than the average skill level of the population, that implies something about maybe where their average is that might put them below the average for the population, which means surely that they're not going to be the one that gets hired. And unfortunately, that relative comparison to the population causes, in a lot of cases, all kinds of bad behaviors in the interview, which we'll talk about in a minute. In some cases, candidates believe that they don't have any weaknesses below the average of the population. This may or may not be true, but the mindset it leads to is to either talk about their strengths because they simply don't believe the question applies to them, and to be asked a weakness question and then to talk about a strength is ludicrous and awful and interesting, supported completely by many, many websites on the internet. In fact, I've come to believe I've found the one exception to the rule, and there's always an exception to the rule, right? Except maybe for Newton. There's always one exception to the rule when it comes to rules. And of course, the rule on the internet that if it's on the internet, of course, it's true. But I actually think I found the exception, and that is guidance on how to handle interviewing questions and specifically behavioral or the weakness question. The other thing you end up doing is if you believe you have a problem, right, that your weakness is a big issue, is to avoid answering, to dodge the question altogether. Which, for the record, we'll do another cast on this at some point, guys, is absolutely the kiss of death in an interview. It's, in fact, one of the top five interviewing mistakes.
With this question or any other question?
With any question. And then, now look, here's something interesting, by the way. Some people just made I could have said it slightly differently, so I may have set up a misunderstanding in some people's minds. I'm talking about somebody who avoids answering the question or dodges the question. Folks, it's okay for many questions, not for the weakness question, but it's okay to not have an answer. It is, especially to behavioral interviewing questions. But it's not okay to avoid answering because now we think you're prevaricating. We think you're fibbing. We think you're being defensive. And in fact, there is an answer, but you don't want to share it. Now, that scale, comparing yourself to the candidates and then thinking that if your skill is below the candidate average, that's a real problem. And again, it leads to bad behaviors. The second approach is way more effective. Candidates thinking of a scale relative to their own skills, their own abilities. In fact, it's really the only reasonable approach because any comparison to a not fully known candidate population is a guess and probably not a very good one. And now the 0 to 10 scale represents the candidate's own skills, and it's dead simple. Their strengths are above 5 and weaknesses are below 5. For a confident candidate who sees the question this way, they're happy to talk. They're happy to talk about a weakness irrespective of whether it's a weakness against the field or not. Okay, if that's the scale, what's something I'm not as good at compared to other things that I am good at? And if you're confident and you believe that you're good for the job, you're going to say, well, my weakness is still relatively a strength compared to some other candidates. And if you're a confident, if you're a mature, if you're a self-aware person, even if you believe your average is slightly above average, the typical candidate population, and so that means some of your weaknesses are below the average maybe for everybody else, you still are willing to talk about it, which shows that you have maturity and good self-awareness. So the self-evaluation scale, that 0 to 10 for your own abilities, makes thinking about this question simple. On the other hand, though, how candidates feel about themselves and their sense of security, their self-awareness, often overtakes the analytics of this. And so a candidate who may, in fact, have the skills and abilities also has the characteristic of significant self-doubt, willingness to fib to cover up a weakness, insecurity that will lead to ineffective and inefficient behaviors in the marketplace. So the weakness question is, in my opinion, very, very powerful.
I think it's a good point. The fact their lack of self-confidence and lack of self-awareness leads to behaviors that will doom them not only in the interview and answering this question, but also in the marketplace, in their job, yeah. Right? That's the connection to performance in the job. And you don't want somebody like that in your organization.
Yeah, we say all the time that, you know, we tell candidates and we sell a product called the Interviewing Series, which is, I think there are about 15 to 20 podcasts that are behind the paywall. And then there are probably 40 or 50 that are not behind the paywall, but are still part of the Interviewing Series. So if you buy the Interviewing Series, I think it's $150 on the website. It's been one of our most popular products. And it was the first product we ever delivered digitally the moment we started. When Steve Holden bought his license all those years ago, included for those inaugural members was the Interviewing Series. And one of the things we talk about in the Interviewing Series is that you don't need to know everything about the company. Too many websites out there on the internet say you need to study the company, you know everything about the company. That's not true. If we're interviewing you, we already know what we need to know about our company. You telling us something about our company is not going to get you a job in 99% of the cases. What you need to know is about yourself. And most people have not done the hard work of understanding what makes them good. And if you haven't done that, you're going to struggle as you become a manager or senior manager or an executive, because self-awareness, I'll just refer back to Drucker. And as long as I refer back to Drucker, I'm always right. And for those of you who don't know, that's why my book is named The Effective Manager, because Drucker's most seminal book is The Effective Executive. And his book is much better than mine, by the way. I just reread it again for probably the 50th time, and I want to be him in my next life. So you have to know yourself. Well, knowing yourself is both skills and abilities and traits and characteristics. And with the weakness question, you have to know yourself. You have to know yourself relative to the job, and you have to be confident enough to talk about it. So it goes to both sides, both the analytical and the emotional, and it goes to preparation as well. Many candidates just aren't self-aware enough to accurately answer the weakness question. And here's the thing. In most cases, guys, even if you're a fairly beginning interviewer, somebody who's knowledgeable, somebody who's done their homework, will detect contradictions between candidates' stated weaknesses and their behavioral patterns in the interview. This is similar to asking the leadership question in an interview. hey, what's your leadership style? And then following it up immediately after they tell you how fabulous they are with, give me a specific example where you had to lead people to a tough goal, but you're able to keep them together and you successfully concluded the goal. And then they'll give you a whole bunch of stuff that has nothing to do with that leadership question. And even if they are self-aware, they're not humble enough to candidly talk about their weaknesses. And lack of self-awareness, lack of humility are both weaknesses. And they can be surmised by any of the common answers we'll talk about that are bad.
Okay. We're probably running out of time.
No, let's make this a 2-hour cast. Come on, we could
do that. Yeah, exactly. No, I think no.
As a special gift on our 12th anniversary, more Mark talking.
So let's stop here. This is going to be a multi-party, obviously, but reasonably so, because I think this is a great topic and folks will find very useful. So we'll finish it up. We'll try to finish it up next week.
Yes. Happy 12th anniversary, Manager Tools community.
Thank you all.